Allie, I am so thrilled that you agreed to come onto The Current, onto this podcast, and share a bit about your story. And I want to just start from the very top. Allie is an exceptional human being who came into my life. We're about to tell the story how. But Allie owns her own company. She runs her own company. It's called Oat House, and it's had a beautiful progression and evolution over time. And it started actually through Allie's eating disorder, her disordered eating, and how her journey back into healing was eating healthy foods and healthy fats. And thus, the most delicious oat spread was born. And we'll talk about Oat House. That will be woven throughout, because business is also such a beautiful and spiritual practice, actually. There's so much about Allie that I'm excited for this conversation to unearth. Allie is a manifester for those interested in human design. Allie is newly engaged to her partner and also business partner. Allie's a dog mom, and Allie also has been on what we might call a soul expansion or awakening journey over the past couple of years. And so, Allie, I'd love to hear from you. What happened when you felt this little voice inside that was like, maybe I should start getting into spirituality?
Yes. Oh, well, first of all, I'm so, so excited to be here. I mean, you know that you've changed my whole life, and I feel almost overwhelmed with just emotion and energy of like this conversation. Like, I'm just so excited for it. it's like exploding out of me. But yeah, so that was a great introduction. I'm Allie, for anyone listening. Thank you so much for spending your time with us here. And yeah, my path to spirituality and sort of just this little voice inside me that was like, you know, hey, tapping me on the shoulder, actually didn't come until, what was it? Probably almost 2 years ago now. And I think, you know, growing up, I was always just very like kind of science brain, you know, I was pre-med in college and never really was very disconnected to my body, to my emotions for a long time, which is where the disordered eating came in. I think it was a way to deal with my emotions in, you know, a way that I thought served me at the time, but it wasn't serving me. And whenever I felt these negative emotions coming up or anything big or scary that I didn't know how to deal with, I just either restricted what I was eating or I binged on food to either, you know, kind of numb and use it almost as like an anesthetic for my emotions. And so then once I healed my relationship with food, I was really just confronted with all these emotions that I didn't really know what to do with. And I think it was just the first time where I realized, wow, like I am a super, you know, deeply emotional being. And I thought for a long time, like, oh, I was just the girl that never cried. You know, I thought I was the cool girl. Like, I'm like, I don't cry. And now I cry like every day, sometimes multiple times a day, especially, you know, around my cycle. Don't even get me started. But then I was, you know, I started this business, as you mentioned, about 5 years ago now. And I was actually on vacation with Eric, my partner, and we were in Mexico. And it was like the first time that I had just a week of not thinking about the business. And I think, you know, anyone who's deeply engulfed in anything, whether it's your career or raising kids or, you know, a new relationship, like it takes up all of your headspace. And it was just, I realized when I wasn't thinking about the business for this week, oh, you know, there's this whole other part of me and this other piece of my brain that I wasn't even paying attention to. And I think it just gave me that little bit of buffer and that space to start to think about other things. And I can't even tell you where it came from. Maybe it's, you know, this manifestor urge or just, you know, a calling from the universe. But it really was just this little tap on the shoulder of like, it's time to start to explore and peel back the layers here. And and I reached out to my friend Hannah, who, you know, we know both know very well. And she, to me, is just this little, like, you know, amazing Buddha spiritual like goddess. And I told her, you know, hey, like for someone who's just getting into this, like give me a 101 like spirituality starter pack. And she sent me your website and told me just how amazing you were. And I was like, done, you know, anything that Hannah recommends, I'm game for. So that's how it all started. But I really went into it honestly, very skeptical and sort of just almost wanting to like, you know, in a, not a cynical way, but just sort of, I went in very, just very skeptical. Like, what is this whole woo-woo thing? I felt kind of yeah, I wasn't really sold on it. And then just the more that I learned, and it was sort of coming back home to myself rather than like indoctrinating myself with all of this knowledge. It was just like, oh, you know, tapping back into my intuition, leaning into my emotions. So it didn't really feel like I was learning things. It felt like I was unlearning things. So it's been, yeah, just a really cool journey. And working with you has been so amazing as well.
Oh, it's so, and Hannah, I know Hannah will listen to this. Hannah, we love you so much. Hannah has been also instrumental on my spiritual path. And it's so helpful to have people who are just along on their journeys to get you started on your own. And Allie, spirituality can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, but what do you think getting into this world has given you? You're saying you're unlearning, but like, what do you think that you came home to?
I think for me, stepping into my power has been such a big one. As you know, that's been a big piece. What was instilled in me from a very early age was the people pleasing and making sure everyone around me was happy and was okay, and kind of keeping myself small to make others comfortable. And so I think, yeah, it was just unlearning all of that and realizing I'm a badass bitch and I have a lot of power inside me. And, you know, it may make other people uncomfortable and that's okay, you know, but not to dull my shine for fear of how others are going to react. That was a huge one. That was probably, you know, one of the biggest things. And then I think secondly is the intuition piece. Like really, I've always had these sort of gut, you know, intuition kind of urges or the tap on the shoulder, like I mentioned, where I don't really know where it came from. And oftentimes I would think other people knew the answer or think that the answer was external, you know, outside of me. And then I would always get so mad at myself. Like, you know, just growing up, I can think of a million different examples where it's like, oh, like I knew that, you know, or I should have listened to myself. And just time and time again, like my intuition has never steered me wrong. And it doesn't mean it's the easy path. You know, sometimes it's making the hard decision, but I think it was just building that confidence. And again, just unlearning and coming back to myself of like, no, you know what the right answer is or the right decision or path or feeling, you know? And so just kind of just tuning into that voice was another big thing for me.
Stepping back into your power and the listening to the voice or the intuition both seem like such important tools, both in your personal life and also as a business leader.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been huge in the business space. And I think especially being a female founder, you kind of have to step into this role and this mask of, you know, being this like almost the masculine side of yourself, right? And more kind of logical, numbers-based, quantitative, like those are the things in the business world that are seen as, you know, better. And the more that I've stepped into the, yeah, the intuitive part, the gentle, the soft type of leader, it's helped us so much. And it's also, it feels better. Like, I think that's something that, you know, in business, people don't talk about as much as like, well, what feels good to you as a leader? You know, it's often like, okay, what creates like the best outcome or what's the ROI, like all these business jargon. But also it's like, you know, running a business is like a marathon. Like it has to be sustainable. And even if maybe being this like numbers based CEO is like better for the ROI of the business, which, you know, newsflash, it actually isn't, at least for us, that's Eric's job. But being this like emotion, you know, intuitive, like, and a perfect example, right before we hopped on this call, you know, I was like a few minutes late because I had a employee that, you know, told me, hey, you know, I felt kind of dismissed by, you know, one of my co-founders because he's this kind of rough around the edges, you know, male kind of direct communication style. And she came to me and, you know, it really showed me that, you know, she really valued the way that I communicate as a leader and felt safe to disclose that to me. And it showed me that is my superpower, is sort of, you know, being this soft, intuitive, emotionally intelligent leader that, you know, is often taken for granted or not, again, prioritized in the business world. So I think that has been, yeah, really helpful. And then lastly, one thing I didn't mention too with my journey is allowing myself to rest. That has been a huge thing that, you know, growing up, I really thought rest was a negative, was a four letter word, is a negative thing, a curse word. And, you know, now I know as a manifester that I need that, because it's like my bursts, my energetic, creative energy really comes in these like lightning bolt. I picture these like lightning bolt strikes. Yeah. You can't be running on fumes forever. And obviously, you know, the business, it doesn't always allow for that. Like right now, I think you probably sensed I'm in a period of exhaustion because I've been just going. But at least I'm aware now of, you know, really trying to prioritize that when I can.
Yeah. And I want to get into this period for you, Allie, and how some of your spiritual practices or just self-understanding are sustaining you. But first, I want to just name for people listening. If you hear the word manifestor and you're like, what, does she manifest things? The answer is yes. And it's an energy type, according to human design. A lot of people that listen already to this podcast know about human design, but for those who are coming in because they love and follow Allie's journey, that's what we're talking about. So human design is one of the many modalities that you got yourself into over the past couple of years as you were dabbling and experimenting. You're a very curious mind, but we'll get back to those. Allie, what's going on in your life right now? Why are you so exhausted?
Oh my God. So much. Yeah, I think it's, you know, what you said before we started recording is like, it feels like this whole new chapter, which it really does. I think for people listening that don't know, like I used to work with Nadia and for, you know, almost 2 years, I think, or a year and a half. And it was so interesting because I felt at the end, like this completion in a positive way of like, you know, oh, I feel just really, yeah, just complete with our work together and so good and juicy. And like, I want to end on a high note, you know? And it's been interesting now because going into this new chapter, it's like, you know, when a little bird is like learning to fly, I just keep being like, was that the right decision? You know, like now that shit's like hitting the fan, it's almost like, okay, you know, like, can I deal with this on my own? And time again, I'm reminded like, yes, you know, I have all like all of these tools that I'm talking about are coming up. And even just knowing, you know, this period is so hectic and chaotic, but it's like, Allie, you know, when I can rest, like that is a priority for me, where before I would have been like, just keep chugging through, you know, not even thinking that or putting it on my radar. So having the tools from the last year and a half have been so just incredibly helpful. But yeah, I think right now is just this intense period of growth for us. So we're actually announcing today at the time of this recording that we're launching into Target nationwide, 1500 stores, which is almost all their stores, which is so crazy. And so by the time this is live, like we'll have already announced that, which is why I can spill the beans. But it's been just, I think it's one of those things, and just being completely real with everyone listening, because love to keep it real. It's been the hardest period of our business. And it's weird to say that because if an outsider, you know, say someone that I just met on the street, I said, oh, we're launching into Target, they'd be like, wow, that's so amazing. And it is. And it's also so, so challenging and so hard and putting a lot of pressure on not only our business, but the founders. And it was really weird because we went last night after work to the Target by our facility and we went to see the jars on shelves for the first time. And I had this really weird moment where I was walking into the store and I was expecting myself, you know, predicting how I was going to feel. I thought I was going to feel emotional. I thought I was like, maybe even going to cry. You know, I was like, maybe I should film this. Like, this would be, you know, like interesting content to show people, like seeing my product on shelves for the first time. And I'm thinking through the lens of like a content creator. And as I walk up to the shelf and I see it for the first time, I felt panic and I felt anxiety and I felt scared because I really, it was almost like, oh my gosh, you know, our product, it felt like it was on a pedestal for the world to see and pick apart. And it's almost like, you know, we've been in stores for a long time, Whole Foods, Sprouts, but Target is like a whole new animal. And, you know, 1500 stores is a lot of stores and a lot of people that have access to your product. So it was just this really odd feeling that I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting to feel anxiety or, you know, fear when seeing my product on shelves for the first time. So that's just one thing that, you know, just keeping it real, it was like, oh, wow, we've been working so hard for this moment. And I expected it to be this like overjoyed emotional moment. And instead I felt really nervous because it's almost like the bigger the fall is from the top or whatever they say, you know, it's like now we're really kind of on display for people to see. And we're still very small, but it's just the biggest retailer we've been in so far. So that was one thing that was just, you know, keeping it real. And then the second thing, yeah, it's just, I think everyone wants this intense growth, but then once it comes, you're just like hanging on for dear life on this roller coaster. And you adjust ultimately, you know, you hire more people or you increase your capacity. Like for us, it's the manufacturing. And then you look back and you're like, I can't believe that was a big deal at the time. You know, looking back at the early days, I remember when it was just Eric, Ari, and I like making everything by hand. And it was so hard for us to make 100 jars at a time. And now we're making 10,000 jars a day. And it's just like, I'm going to look back on this period and I'm going to, you know, be like, wow, what were we sweating about? But right now it feels so significant. So I like to bring that up because it's also cool to, you know, compare that to the growth, the personal growth too, like taking it, not just with the business, but it's like, yeah, the eating disorder stuff, you know, at the time it was so significant and consumed my entire life. And now I'm hopping on calls with investors or talking about it on this podcast. And it feels like I'm talking about a different person or a different lifetime because I don't feel the emotional, you know, connection at all. It's just like me telling a story of another person for some reason. So I think that perspective has been really helpful because it's just a good reminder when things feel so overwhelming right now, just keeping that in mind. It's like a little shred of hope. Like I'm going to look back on this one day and laugh, hopefully, or cry. No, but like hopefully look back and be like, oh, I totally got through that. You know, it's like you get through 100% of the days or whatever they say. You've gotten through 100% of the tough days that you've had. So yeah, I'm in the challenging part right now, but I know it's temporary and I know, you know, we'll definitely get through it.
Thank you for so generously sharing what's actually happening for you. I think it's going to be so helpful for people to understand what you're explaining, Allie, seems like the growth cycle. Like whenever you expand and grow yourself to new edges and to new places, whether that's from a spiritual perspective, a self-growth perspective, a family healing, eating disorder, business, et cetera, there's going to be this moment of like, here we go. And I think it's so beautiful and poignant that you describe this experience of going into Target. And to me, I see someone who is so open and receptive to your own emotional experience that even though your mind is like, This is a content moment. This is incredible. You were really receptive to what was happening for your body in that moment. And also, Allie, I sense a sensitivity as a leader to it's not just a one-way communication. Like as you open yourself up to feeling emotions and energies from other people, you recognize like you were connecting to all the people in that moment that would pick up your jar on the shelf. And that's a really big energetic portal that your business is going through.
Yes. Oh yeah. It was also this moment of just kind of imposter syndrome and shock. And it felt like I was looking at jars that I had brought into the store and placed on the shelf. And they were, you know, like they just felt out of place, like on, you know, next to Justin's and Biscoff, you know, cookie butter and RX bar, like whatever, all these brands. And I was like, what are you doing here? Like, why are we on the shelf? And then it just, you know, and it still, I don't think has sunk in too. So also wanted to share that, like, it's not this feeling of like, I see us on shelves and I'm like, yes, we've made it. Like, it still feels a little sticky and like, it's almost like my mind hasn't caught up to it yet. And then lastly, yeah, I was really tuned in because I went with Eric and Ari, my two co-founders, and just watching them, you know, and I was sort of like, I wanted them to be really overjoyed and excited. And, you know, cause they've been working so hard on the operation side and they were kind of like, okay, cool. And then we all walked out. And I think all of us were kind of just like, huh, you know, like, I guess it just wasn't this moment that we had maybe built up in our heads. And I think a lot of that too, is like, I maybe had more of that moment when I got off the call with the Target buyer and she was like, we want you in 1500 stores. And I was like, holy shit, you know? And we didn't have to put in all the work to actually get on shelves yet. And it was just this exciting, like that's what I love. I love the like early brainstorming phases and not actually like doing the work. And so that was maybe that more of that moment for me, but it almost felt like, okay, seeing on shelves, it was like that excitement and that spark was kind of diminished by that point, because we've been working on it for the last 2 months. So yeah, I just wanted to keep that real, because it's really the more goals that we've hit, you know, even taking a step back outside of the business, like personal goals or whatever goals people have, you really have to find the joy in, you know, reaching that goal and find the joy in the daily little moments. Because if you put all of your eggs in this end goal, you know, in that one basket, you're going to get there and it's just going to feel like it paled in comparison to what you built it up in your mind to be. And that's been my experience. This whole journey is just really being so tunnel vision on the end goal and then getting there and being let down. So I've been trying to, you know, especially with the business, it's like, okay, find the magic in the everyday. Don't just be focused on selling the business or getting acquired, because you're going to get there and you're going to be disappointed inevitably, but it's hard for your brain to wrap, you know, to wrap around that, because we're so conditioned to be so goal oriented.
Beautiful. So what is bringing you like small moments of joy in the mundane right now?
Ooh, let's see. Well, if speaking of getting engaged, so wedding planning for me has been something going into it I was really nervous about, because I was like, you know, with the business, I'm like, I don't want this to feel like a second job. And you hear from so many people, it's like wedding planning is, they complain about it, they bitch and moan. They're like, oh, so glad that my wedding is over. And I was like, what the hell? You're spending thousands of dollars to, you know, be stressed about this thing. Like, for someone on the outside, I didn't get it. And so I think that's what really pushed me away from wanting a wedding for a long time, because people just didn't make it sound very appealing. And then I just had this moment, and I, you know, it was when I was talking to you and other people, I was like, wait, I can actually do this any way that I want. Like, you know, I can recreate, I can reinvent this day. I can make it more than one day, you know, I can just make it look however I want. And I really, Eric and I both agreed, like, we want this to be fun. We want this to be light, creative, fun, time with our friends and family. And so we're getting married in September of next year in Mallorca, Spain. And we're doing like a week long. It's kind of just like going on vacation with our friends and family. There's going to be like 30 or 35 people, super small. And, you know, just with the wedding ceremony thrown in at some point. And I was creating my Pinterest board, and I was just like, I was really in flow. Like, I was just, it didn't look like a traditional wedding Pinterest board. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But for me, I was like pulling art pieces and different like colors and paintings and these cool sculpture moments and flowers. And it just looked like this like Salvador Dali meets like psychedelic meets like, you know, garden, like cottage core, like garden party. And it was colorful and it was fun. And it just felt so me. And so I think finding my creative expression through that. And once I hired a wedding planner who's like helping me handle the logistics and like the stuff that feels like work, then it really started to feel like finding the magic, you know, in the everyday. Obviously, like, you're planning a big event in another country. So like, there is going to be parts, I'm trying to get real with myself. Like, it is going to be stressful at times, but just keeping in mind, like, I'm doing this for fun, you know, I'm spending all this money, you know? And so I really want to like bring my friends and family together and just have like a fucking great party. That's really the intention. So that's been really lately what I've been spending time doing. And it's been bringing me a lot of joy. So
I've heard someone say, don't plan a wedding that you think everybody else wants you to have or that you've been conditioned into. Like, plan a wedding that is basically an extension of yourself. Mm-hmm. And something that I admire about you, Allie, is that I saw you for a year and a half showing up, and you were always in a different color and a different outfit and a different hue. And so to me, what you just described, those genres of expression, you do actually live your life in that way, where you're bringing splashes of color and self-expression. And I know you dyed your hair pink for a little bit. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit more to that and how what you wear, how that impacts you.
Oh, yes. I love this question. So actually last week I was in Denver or Boulder for this like investor pitch, and I was so nervous because every investor pitch that I've done, Eric has been there. And it's kind of ties back to like stepping into my power, you know, and just building that confidence within myself, because, you know, I do 99% of the talking. Like Eric is kind of just this emotional support animal for me in these calls. And he just sits there and like, maybe he'll throw in like a little stat, you know, he's the stat man. He'll throw in a little like number every once in a while. But for the most part, like I know my story, I know everything. And I, you know, I have a basic sense of the numbers they're going to ask. But this was the first investor pitch that I was doing completely alone. And it was live in front of 100 people in person in Boulder. And there were some really big names in the industry there. And so I was super nervous going into it. And what I kept coming back to was, you know, I was kind of like picking out my outfits as I was packing. And I was like, I looked at like this random blazer that I has like been collecting dust in my closet. And I just keep saving it for a moment like this, where I'm like, oh, I need to wear this for an investor pitch. And then I was like, you know what? Screw that. Like, I am going to wear what represents me, what I feel comfortable in. And if they don't want to invest in me or they don't like that about me, then I don't want them as an investor, because they're really at this stage of our business, like they're investing in you as a person. Projections are bullshit, basically. So I put on this like really fun black and white checkered, you know, set, which like you may have seen in some of my content. I wear it a lot. And I also packed a similar set that's like really colorful and has all these patterns. And I wore that for like the night before. And when I tell you, it was not only, you know, I got a million compliments on it, but it was an amazing conversation starter. And what people told me time and time again was, oh, I wish I had the confidence to wear that. And I looked at them and it was this really interesting moment, because I was like, you know, only a year ago, I wasn't dressing like this. And I think it's been this intentional decision, again, finding the joy in the everyday. This is one of the ways that I do that, is, you know, dressing in a way that is bright and fun and colorful. And it sort of is my way in this whole, you know, clusterfuck hurricane of this business, when shit is hitting the fan and I can't control a lot of the stuff that may be happening. I can control how I show up into the world and the energy and the positivity that I bring. And so it's just, yeah, that was one example of just how it alters not only how I feel about myself, but how other people perceive me. And so it's been really cool. And fashion, you know, you can, people can think about, you know, what they want about fashion. It is, I guess, more of like a superficial, you know, kind of frivolous thing, but it changes how you feel and how you perceive other people. And then it all ties in to going back to my eating disorder recovery. Like for so long, I just hated the way that I looked and I hated my body. And I just would wear things to cover up and hide how I look. And so it kind of feels like this reclaiming of power and reclaiming of myself to show up in a way that just feels authentic. And so it was really cool to do that. And, you know, everyone who said like, oh, I wish I had the confidence, I wanted to shake them by the shoulders and be like, you do. Like, I am no different than you. You know, it's like, you just put it on and you just own it, you know, period. Yeah. So I think dressing and just wearing more color, you know, for some people that's not their MO, but I love when people show up in the world like authentically as themselves. You know, like I think of in high school, like all the gothic, Hot Topic, like emo kids. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, at the time I was kind of like, oh, that's weird. You know, they're not wearing Abercrombie, like thinking in that mainstream. And now I'm like, oh my God, the self-expression at such an early age, like I'm just in awe. So, yeah, it's been like a new, that's why it's funny, people, you can't see me right now, but Nadia and I are both wearing black. And I was like, this is so unlike me. Like, I don't know why I'm wearing black today. But yeah, so that's been really fun. Just the fashion side of things.
Yeah. I'm just hearing people listening being like, yes, like the audacity, like, what if I gave myself permission to take up space? What if I gave myself permission to love myself? What would I wear if I loved myself? What would I wear if I could look in the mirror and say, hell yeah, like, let's do this.
And the pink hair too, that's something that I never thought that I would have the confidence to do that. And then it was like, oh, once I did it and just owned it, and people then were saying to me, oh, like, I wish I could pull that off. And I'm like, no, you can, like, you really can. Like I was that person that was like, oh, I don't think I can pull this off. Like, I think it's the energy and like that. Yeah. Just, you know, sitting back in your bones and just owning like who, exactly who you are. People sense that from a mile away. Like when I follow people on social media now, I'm like very discerning about who I follow. It's only people that really, like, they don't have to have the same interests as me, but I just love following people that own exactly who they are. Like, there's a gal that's also in the food space. And I think, I don't know if I've told you about her before. She'd be great on your podcast, actually. But she is the founder of a brand called Omsom. And they're this loud, proud Asian American brand. And she is, I think, first generation Vietnamese. And she's also a BDSM educator. But again, like, and I reached out to her and I knew nothing about BDSM. I still don't really, but I reached out to her and I was like, hey, like, I'm not really reaching out for the BDSM piece, but I just want to say, like, I see you. And the way that she just shows up, like, she wears like a harness everywhere. And I was like, I love that. Like, you are just so cool. She has these little earrings that are just like butcher knives. I was like, that is so cool. Like, just watching people, you know, step in and own themselves. Cause she was saying, you know, as an Asian American woman, like, you're kind of put in a box to be like submissive and meek and, you know, all these stereotypes. And she was like, I'm sick of that, like, bullshit. I'm going to break out of that. So yeah, that's what really inspires me lately, is people showing up exactly who they, how they are.
Yes. There's something I think that's a takeaway for people listening. What I'm hearing you say, Allie, is there's this continuous moment of like, I'm really nervous to do this pitch, to dye my hair pink, to et cetera, et cetera. And there is a way that you hold yourself through the turbulence. It's almost like for each flight, you need to leave the Earth's orbit as a rocket ship. And it's really, really intense before you take off. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for people, like, just getting through that initial turbulence period of, oh my God, is this really happening?
Yes, that is. Yeah, that's so true. You know, what came to me as you were saying that was actually when I did the psychedelic experience. And that, you know, when the drugs hit and you're rocketing into orbit, and I had never done that amount of, you know, psychedelics before. And it really felt like this, you know, just hanging on for dear life. And I think you just have to, like, I was just constantly reminding myself, like, surrender, surrender, because when you, you know, eating disorder, any sort of like way that people try to insert control over their lives, it's just this false sense of control. Like, we really have no control over hardly anything in our lives, and just coming to terms with that and knowing that it's just, life is a lot easier when you're able to at least try to relax into things and surrender. That's been really helpful. But I don't think that that phase ever really gets much easier. I think you just get comfortable with the uncomfortable, I think. And it's similar to like working out. Like, I love, you know, that I was an athlete growing up, because, you know, I was like, after school, I'd go to like track practice straight to volleyball. And I'm like, that's 4 hours of working out. But like, you know, and I was put through a lot of just hard things, you know, in practice. And then having that sort of mental fortitude and, you know, being able to withstand that, then you approach other things in life and you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. I was able to, you know, do these like suicide drills on the basketball court and, you know, was running so hard, I felt like I was going to puke, but then this also feels, you know, not as hard compared to that. So I think you just kind of get a little bit better at handling that uncomfortableness, but then also just, you know, kind of what we were talking about earlier, looking back and being like, oh, I weathered the storm and I made it, you know, out on the other side and I'm better for it. Keeping that in mind too is also helpful. But when you're in it, sometimes that advice is annoying because you're just like, well, that's easy to say when you're on the other side. But when you're really in it, you know, like I am right now, it's like even me telling that to myself, like, you'll get through this, it's temporary, it's sort of helpful, but it's also like, well, I wish that I was done with and I wish I was on the other side. But then when I get to these periods of kind of this more plateau, calm waters, I get bored and I'm itching for some activity. So I don't know. There's never like a situation where I think it's this perfect balance. But yeah, I think just the getting comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yeah. I'm just sitting across from someone, like, you are the product of continuing to push yourself past your own perceived limits and recognizing the limit does not exist. Like, the possibilities are infinite, including something that might seem as trivial as wedding planning. You're infusing so much color and joy and love and playfulness and aliveness. It's so exciting because throughout this entire journey of life, there will always be a new thing, whether that's exploring BDSM with this person. And, you know, that's what's so exciting about our, like, quote unquote, therapist breakup, which is really just a graduation, is like putting you back into your own orbit and saying, okay, I got myself. And Ali, I want to go back. I want to talk about psychedelics, but I want to go back to the beginning where you're like, yeah, now I cry, you know, sometimes multiple times a day. I hear so many people saying, okay, how do I access my emotions? What is that like for you to feel an emotion, to recognize it, and then to actually sort of process it within your own system?
Yeah, I think for me, everyone's different. I think for me, it was first removing the shame from these, some of these emotions that we perceive as, you know, societally negative. So, you know, sadness, obviously crying. I had a lot of shame around that. I felt like it was a sign of weakness. And I saw this really beautiful quote from Pinterest because I was pinning for my wedding. And I'm in my Pinterest era. There's some really good quotes on there. And it said, oh, I'm going to butcher it, but something to the extent of like, you know, crying is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign that you're alive, because when you're babies, you know, obviously you're born crying. And I love that reframe, because I think, yeah, we're just, especially men, you know, it's like the whole extent of our relationship. Like, I think I've only seen Eric cry maybe like once or twice. We've been dating for almost 10 years. And yeah, it's just, it's really ingrained, especially with, you know, men, to like be strong and show up. And I think it's the ultimate sign of strength when you're able to be in touch with your emotions and just let them flow, and then, you know, kind of let them run their course and then move on. Like, it's the best to just process and get them out. But, you know, that shame, it's not easy to just say, okay, well, I'm not, you know, I don't feel embarrassed of crying anymore. Like, it still shows up, especially if I feel like, you know, one day we were driving home from the facility and it was Eric, Ari, and myself in the car. And I spent so much time with Ari, you know, who's my third co-founder. And I felt this overwhelm and this like kind of tears welling up. And I was like, hold it in until we drop him off. And then once he's out of the car, I can just, you know, unleash on Eric, which is what I normally do. And I was like, why? Like, you know, I'm like, I'm with, like, Ari's basically my, you know, brother at this point. Like, we spend so much time together. But it was just interesting to hear that internal dialogue. So it still comes up, but it's just being aware of it, you know. So that's the one thing, is the shame. And then second is, you know, I think we bucket these emotions in like sadness, anger, kind of these bigger buckets. But emotions are complex, and you can have both. And like, I really love this idea of both. And the target being, you know, seeing our jars on shelves is the perfect example, because I felt proud, I felt elated, but I also felt anxious and nervous. And if you were to tell me, okay, wrap that up and just put a name on that one emotion, I honestly couldn't do it, because it felt like they were kind of fighting for space and real estate in my brain. So being, you know, aware that emotions are complex, they're always undulating and changing, and that's okay. And then lastly, finding healthy coping mechanisms. So right before we got, I have to tell you this, right before we got on this call, I screamed my brains out into the pillow behind me, because I felt so much anger in my body. And anger is a feeling that I have been working on with you. I feel a lot of anger, and it's something that I think is the hardest emotion for me to deal with, because it comes on so hot and so strong. And I think as women, it's like anger is to women what crying, you know, sadness is to men, where it's like societally, like angry women are not, you know, you're not supposed to be an angry woman. And screaming into a pillow has been this most cathartic form and healthy outlet for me, because, you know, in the past I would direct my anger towards usually Eric or people in my life, you know, before Eric, like my parents, people that were close to me, that I felt this, I could let my guard down and just unload on them. And that's not fair. You know, it's not fair to them. And it's not conducive for our relationship. So when I feel that come on, yeah, it's just, you know, when I unleash, it felt like my temperature in my body, just like it just escaped out of the screaming of my mouth. And so I think finding those healthy coping mechanisms, you know, is great, but it takes time. And the last thing I would say is finding someone who's a professional that can work with you on that. Because having you as my guide, I also worked with a somatic therapist that helped me really tap into my body. and unleash stored emotions in my body. Like that's probably the most effective.
Yeah. You carved out regular time to let out the seam, so to speak. And now as it comes up, you're holding yourself through the emotional experience, but you had professional guidance to let the years of that stored energy out of your body, which I think a lot of people don't recognize, is that if you didn't let out the emotion in the way that you just did through yelling in the pillow when you were younger, like it's stored in your body. It's there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. The somatic practice has been really helpful for that, because I think as someone who's good with their words, I had a way of talking myself out of things, or, you know, justifying things, you know, intellectualizing things, but your body doesn't lie. And just letting your body, like tapping in and letting your body lead the way. There was a lot of stored bullshit in, you know, my neck, my hips, like where a lot of places where it's typically stored, especially with, you know, the sexual assaults that I had suppressed for so many years. So letting that out, I think, you know, it came out in ways that I wasn't expecting. You know, I would go into a session feeling like very jolly and happy-go-lucky, and then it would be like this crazy release emotionally. So that's another tool that was really helpful.
Beautiful. I would love to go into psychedelics and perhaps the sexual assault. I know you've talked about it on social media, but whatever feels important to share at this point, because I know the story can take many different turns. But I'm just feeling the energy of some people listening and perhaps never opening themselves up to psychedelics before, and feeling this nervousness and sort of like gripping energy. Like I'm on the earth right now. Like how could I ever go up into a rocket ship and go into orbit? And because you've taken that mission and you've come back down, what do you have to share?
I mean, first of all, for anyone feeling nervous, that is normal. I'm pretty sure everyone in our group, like it'd be weird if you weren't nervous. I think Nick, you know, one of the facilitators said that, because it's almost that reverence to, you know, undertaking something so profound and so deep. And it is scary. And I think it's, again, what we were talking about earlier in conversation, you know, pushing yourself to that edge. And I think, you know, feeling that, it just is a sign that you're pushing past the limits of what you thought was your, you know, your limit. And there is a difference between, you know, fear that comes from like terror and, you know, a negative fear, and then that fear that you're like, okay, this is scary, but this is growth. When I was considering going on this, you know, psychedelic journey, I definitely felt the latter, which was, I know I need to do this. I feel in my bones and my intuition telling me like all signs point to go, but it was just that little voice that was like, well, you know, my control voice that was like, you know, but this is your safety net. And we know what this, you know, what this planet is like. We don't need you rocket shipping to other planets. My experience was so profound. And as you know, Nadia, like it's so hard to put into words the entire thing, and it almost cheapens it. What I really want to touch on is, number one, I had not done anything like this. I had microdosed mushrooms a little bit here and there, but again, I was so terrified of letting go and that control that I never was, you know, quote unquote, out of control or, you know, tripping or anything like that. Where my partner Eric has done, you know, countless trips at a higher dose and really felt, you know, super profound experiences from that. And so he was always telling me, Allie, this would help you so much with like your body image stuff and your, you know, anxiety and all these things. And like, I knew that, but I was just like, ah, it just seems so easy for him to just let go, you know? And like, I'm the type of person that when I smoke weed, I'm like Googling like how to get less high. Like, I'm literally like, this is, you know, I love being sober. And alcohol was really the only thing. I think that's why a lot of people turn to alcohol, is like, you know, it's a way to let go of that control and it helps you, where some other drugs, you know, like psychedelics, it's, you know, much more heady and intellectual and for some reason feels scarier. So I just want to start with that, because I wasn't someone that was like, yeah, let's do it. No regrets. Like, let's fucking go. You know, I was very hesitant. And I think having the really safe environment that you guys created was like most important for me. I'd worked with you for almost a year at that point. And so that felt very safe to me. And then the group setting I was nervous about because I, again, was, you know, my whole life had built this false illusion of looking good in front of other people. And I didn't want to be perceived in a way that I couldn't control the narrative. And so, like, you know, taking a high dose of psychedelics in front of strangers who I'd never met was probably the most terrifying thing to me. I'm like, what if I start saying weird things? What if I pee my pants? Like, I don't know. I just didn't even know it was going to happen. And it turned out to be the most magical part, which I, you know, I don't have to tell you. You literally facilitated it, but it was like just so incredible. And then you learn so much from other people's experience and it was just phenomenal. But I think the sexual assault that I had basically suppressed, you know, for 10 years, it happened to me in college and it just felt like this raw, you know, I think of it as like this ember, like this raw coal that like I couldn't get close to. It just was like so, so hot. And it really goes to show that, you know, emotions that you suppress, they don't go away. Like you can forget about them. You can pretend that they're not there, but until you deal with them and process and heal them, they're going to stay there indefinitely. And honestly, they're going to fester, you know, like a wound that you don't take care of and just get worse. And so I tried to talk, you know, a little bit with you and kind of like talk more talk therapy. And it just felt like it made things like it opened it up and it just felt overwhelming and scary. And then in somatic therapy, you know, I visualized this like really safe space and we started to like tap into it body wise. And again, it still felt too much. So the psychedelic space was so important and helpful and healing because it just, you know, on a scientific level, I'm not sure what it does in your brain, but it just, I visualize, you know, in my journey, the person who did it to me, I had no ill feelings towards them. Like I hugged them, I forgave them, and truly from a place of like soul to soul. It wasn't this fake, like, oh, you know, forgive and forget. Like I really did. And that was so important because I could have never done that in, you know, a sober state of mind. But I was nervous going into that because I was nervous, you know, having that trauma that it was going to be like a negative experience or it was going to, you know, you never know how it's going to go because you're not in control. And yeah, it ended up just being so, so profound and so healing. Again, everyone's experience is so different, but I couldn't have been able to talk about it like I am right now with you if I didn't have that. So
you described it so well, the hot ember. And I'm wondering what it feels like now talking about it.
I struggle with explaining how it feels now because similar to the eating disorder piece, it is a part of me and I don't want to sound detached when I talk about it. You know, same with my eating disorder recovery, but it kind of feels like just a different lifetime. And I prefer that because it doesn't feel like this hot, you know, intense thing that's like going to overwhelm me with emotion. But I also, yeah, I guess I just struggle with it because I'm like, you know, it was such a big part of my life and it is this, you know, trauma that did happen to me, but I feel just, I can compartmentalize it a lot better. And I'm able to just talk about it with you and not, it's not going to like, you know, ruin my whole day. And like, I kind of feel detached from it in a way, which again, like, I don't know if that's good or bad, but yeah, I'm just able to be more objective and logical about kind of what happened and it doesn't feel so raw.
The emotional charge is gone because you actually went in and into the emotion. You went into the experience. You went into your body. You released it. You're experiencing this level of neutrality on the other end of it that most people try to achieve by just pushing it, pushing it, pushing it down. Mm-hmm. And what I just want people to come away from this is there's a lot of fear around therapy or psychedelics or putting yourself out there or, you know, wearing the incredible clothing that makes you feel more expressed in life. There's like this like gripping that I can feel from so many people. And we've all felt that before. And just hearing your voice right now, I hope that people feel really empowered that the thing that feels scariest is what will get you to the greatest level of peace on the other side.
Yes, that is it. That is so it.
And it's beautiful.
It is. I never understood this phrase, like doing the work, before I started working with you, because I was like, what does that mean? Like, everyone's like doing the work. And now I'm like, oh my God, I get it. Like, you really, and it's like, it's not always enjoyable. You know, it's like when people ask me about my psychedelic journey, you know, experience, it's like after I came back down and like landed back on planet Earth, there was this like relief of like, okay, like I came back and I'm safe. And it felt like I'm good. Like I don't need to do this again for, you know, until I feel that calling, which is why I think it's such a special, you know, medicine. And it's not something for me that feels like it should be a class one, whatever drug, but that's a whole nother conversation, because it's not like addictive. I wasn't like, oh, I want to do this again. I don't know. Maybe some people do, but it really felt like, you know, was it fun? No, but you're right. Like I went in, it was powerful and it was healing and it was profound. And it was the most profound experience like of my life, arguably. And just now that level of peace in my everyday is so priceless. And so it's like really pushing past that discomfort to get in to the emotions and sort of, you know, and really give them attention is all that I feel like you're really doing, is just like acknowledging them. And then they kind of like, I picture them as like, you know, little butterflies. You're just like, okay, I see you. And then they're like, okay, yay, I can fly away. And they just want to be seen. And now I'm like, okay, you know, I can move on and yeah, have that less of the emotional charge in my everyday.
I'm crying. It's like so beautiful, because that self-trust is forged through doing it one time and recognizing that no matter what experience you move through, mm-hmm. you've moved through some wild experiences while we were working together, business, professionally, personally, et cetera, and you will continue to. But once you've helped yourself through experiencing emotions, it's not that you're invincible. It's you will continue to feel things, but you've got yourself. And that's the gift. That's what I want for everyone on this planet to recognize. Like there's nothing too big or too great that you can't handle.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. That is the thing. Like same thing with eating disorder recovery. I thought once I heal my relationship with food, I'm never going to have thoughts that come up, or I'm never going to have negative body talk. You know, I'm always going to look in the mirror and be like every day, I love myself. Like I am perfect. And it's not true. It's just, you have the tools and you don't spiral. You know, maybe if I have a day where I look in the mirror, like today I started my period and it's like, you know, feeling a little bloated, like not feeling my hottest and wearing sweatpants today. But I can, if the negative self-talk comes up, I can be like, oh, I know what that is. And it's not the truth. It's not fact, you know? And so having that tool and just acknowledging when that comes up is so helpful. And same with emotions, you know, like me screaming in the pillow right before this interview, if I didn't have that tool, I would have suppressed my anger and it just would have come up, you know, at a later point in a different way. So it's not like suppressing the emotions, it ever makes them go away. They just like unleash in different ways. So
we have to talk about human design. Obviously, yes. I love talking about human design, but you are a manifester, meaning that you're a fairly rare energy type. You are the initiator. You have the idea. You have the spark of inspiration and the urge, and you have the energy. You're sort of self-contained in yourself that you know how to move against it. I want to dye my hair pink. I'm going to go do it. And all you have to do is inform the people around you to create the greatest amount of spaciousness from them, and also to get them along on the alley ride, if we want to call it that. Mm-hmm. You're a very emotional being. You're an emotional decision maker, meaning you cannot get rid of your emotional waves. You have to ride them and learn how to surf with them. And then it's a really fun experience. And as a manifester, when people get in your way, you can feel white hot flashes of anger, which is here to teach you, oh, I didn't inform them effectively. I didn't let them know what I was up to. And they interrupted my flow. So you learning about human design, I'd love to know. I am actually curious, like as a human, like has this been something that you thought about since you've learned?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, everything you just shared, I'm like nodding like, yes, yes, yes. So first, before I learned about human design, I think I did a lot of these things, but naming them and feeling validated and seen and almost, you know, you sharing with me, like, this is who you are and this is how you operate. It has helped me infinitely just show up in my relationship, in my business. And we actually did, for people listening, I did a reading with Nadia and my whole family. I did one with Eric, my partner. And then I gifted one to Ari, my business partner. And so I'm like a believer. Like, I just, and I love the dynamics of like learning about other people and how they operate. And what's been really interesting is Eric and I are both manifestors. So it's good and bad, I think. but we both are very, you know, like kind of headstrong. We have these ideas. And I think that informing has been really, really beneficial to our relationship, because that was something that in the past, I don't know why it upset me so much, but I really, you know, that was like the one kind of recurring argument that Eric and I would have is like, you know, I kept telling him, you need to communicate with me better. You need to communicate with me better. And he was like, I am communicating with you, you know? And it was almost like that helped get us on the same page and speaking the same language. But what I was going to say too is, before learning about human design, I thought everyone operated in the same way. And some people were just, you know, lazy or just like XYZ. And so for me, it was so odd when people would talk about doing something, but they wouldn't take action on it, you know? And that was the most frustrating thing for me. I'm like, you know, Ari, for example, I kept telling him, I gifted him the session with you. And I was like, have you booked with Nadia yet? And he was like, oh no, like, but I will. And I'm like, we're literally driving home right now. Like, you have 45 minutes in the car. I'm like, just do it on your phone. Like, I couldn't understand. And that's, you know, that's since I've learned about human design. And even then I'm like, it's just always, you know, checking in with myself of like, okay, Allie, is how you operate. It's not how everyone, you know, everyone else does. And so I think it's just helped in countless ways. Like, any interaction I have with another human, I almost wish when you're meeting someone, it's like you say your name and then you say what your human design is, because it would help so much. With just like, I almost want to like profile all of my employees because I think it would help a lot. But yeah, it's just been, it's been countlessly, you know, effective in every way. And I'd love to actually like dive deeper, because I feel like it's almost like I'm just scratching the surface with certain things.
I have been so curious to talk to you about the energetics of informing. You live a fairly public life. For those listening, Allie's born under the gate of the marketer, or the gate of the EOS, gate 26. So her greatest gift is persuasion, but in integrity, knowing how to pitch things, knowing how to communicate ideas of value to people and have them really take it in and recognize its worth. And Allie's smiling. You can't see her, but Allie, I just love this right now, impromptu reading. But I have witnessed you online really open up this gift. And you've been doing it for a long time. But since I started working with you, just like this ability that you have to really just own the power. And I feel that you're so in flow with informing, because as you show up in stories or as you share what's happening in business on a post, like, what is that experience like for you of like, I know that this needs to be shared, and then allowing it to impact in a way that only a manifestor can, kind of informing people and then seeing the ripples of like the book that you share, and then having people reach out to you and be like, I'm reading the book. And it's, I just want to hear more about what does it feel like, this cycle of catharsis? Does it feel like this, it's complete and now it's off on its way?
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, first I was laughing when you were talking about the gate of the marketer, because it just showed it, like something just came up for me when I was doing the pitch last week. It's so funny, like the persuasion. So Eric didn't tell me, but he actually changed a number on our slide that showed, like, I said in my presentation, we were profitable last year by 100K. And he was like, oh, I was looking at the wrong thing. We actually lost like 30K last year, which, like, in the grand scheme of things, it's splitting hairs, but I didn't realize that. So I was presenting and I was like, yeah, we were profitable last year by 100K, like so
assured.
Yeah. Yeah, so assured, so confident. And no one said anything. And literally on the screen is the number minus 36K. And no one came up to me. No one challenged me. And it was just so funny, because afterwards, like, I was looking at the presentation and I was like, not one person in the room, you know, and I don't know if people noticed or whatever, but it was just one perfect example of like, you know, me just like being so self-confident and like the number is blatantly like I'm saying a completely different thing. So that's why I was like kind of laughing. So Instagram stories for me is just, it's the perfect medium because it's like, you know, by the time you have to like edit a video and post a reel, like for me, the moment's gone. I'm like, I just want to hop on there, no makeup, like hairnet on, and just talk about like what is on my mind. And I can't, the only way I can explain, yeah, that it's almost like the tap on the shoulder. It's like, there's something inside me that is just like, I need to share this with someone. And I've always been that way. Like, when Eric and I got engaged, you know, it wasn't that I wanted to broadcast it to the world, but it was like, as soon as we got engaged, I was like, Eric, we need to text our friends. Like, we need to tell our friends that we're engaged. It was almost like, if I don't tell someone this, it's going to explode. Like, I'm going to explode. And he was like, Allie, like, just give it an hour. And I was like, no. And from an early age, like my mom, I mean, she probably still has all these, but like journals, I was like, I was journaling from the time I was in kindergarten, like just journals and journals of like today at basketball practice, like ran, I don't even know what who I was talking to, just word vomiting, you know, and it's always been that way. And so I love Instagram stories because I can just get on there. I don't care how I look. It's not really about me. It's like sharing this information with someone that it can impact or it can resonate with. And that's really my intention is like, my favorite thing is when I share something and someone's like, responds, oh my gosh, like I thought I was the only one, or I feel so seen. I love helping other people feel less alone because I've had so many instances in my life with the eating disorder stuff and the sexual assault where like I just felt like I was the only one going through that because people weren't talking about it. So like leading up to this Target thing, it was so hard for me, you know, I couldn't say that we were launching into Target and I had to be so vague, you know, and say, oh, like we're launching into this big retailer, but I still had to talk about like, times are tough right now. Like, you know, life feels really challenging. And just sharing that, I think, is so cathartic for me and also hopefully helpful for other people listening. But yeah, it just, again, the only way I can describe it is like, if I don't share it, it feels like I'm going to explode. Like I have to get it out. Where Eric could go. I think, you know, before we got engaged, Eric didn't post on social for like the last 3 years or something. Like he doesn't have that need at all.
Yeah. He's a manifester, but in a different flavor. He's sharing with his close friends and his community and his network and informing in that way. And yeah, Allie, I just think that it's so cool because it's so much manifester empowerment. Like your role in our community, in our society as a manifester is to initiate. So that feeling like you're going to explode is your body being like, this is actually intended to spur something in someone else. And all you need to do is just share as it's flowing through you. Just mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yes. I think again, like stepping into that and the human design has helped a lot with like just feeling validated and seen that this is actually my gift and this is my role. Where there's been times in the past, I'm not going to lie, where I'm sharing and I'm like, does anyone care about this? You know, like, is this thing on? Is anyone listening? And it's not that I need the validation, but it is helpful when, you know, you feel this urge to do something and you kind of, it just feels misguided where you're like, you know, is this me just wanting to be like, oh, see me. And then, you know, having that sort of clarification of like, no, this is actually like the initiation and stirring shit up in other people is one of your gifts. And so it's just helped me become clear to that and feel more, again, like self-confident in that.
Totally. And it was a big piece of our work too, is recognizing what's for me, what's for others, where do I share, what's the line? Is this something that I really want to do? And I just love being on the other side, Allie, and just hearing the conviction in your sense of self and what you share and your messages as they evolve. You're always going to be tugging the threads of your own curiosity. You have, for those who are human design nerds like me, she has the channel of curiosity that we can feel right now. It's connecting your mind to your ability to communicate. And it's always what's the next thing that you're curious about. So that actually feels like a good maybe place to wind this conversation down is, what are you most inspired by? What are you most, and I know you're on also moving through a lot of exhaustion announcing this target today, but what do you feel, where do you feel the threads of your curiosity pulling you right now?
Oh, I love that. So, you know, what has been so kind of pulling at me lately is because I love pushing myself to the edge. When I was on stage last week at HEI, which was this investor pitch, I have never felt simultaneously so terrified and so alive. And my mom has always, she's like, Allie, I keep having these vivid dreams of you being a public speaker. And I, you know, and when your parents tell you something, you're like, abort, like going the other direction. I'm like, no way. And also public speaking, who wants to do that? That sounds terrifying. And then I was like, I don't know, something about the it being terrifying is also alluring to me. And so, and it's almost like Instagram stories, but in real life. And so I've been really interested, and I just kind of have this like foreshadowing of, I feel like public speaking in some way, and I'm not picturing like the female Tony Robbins energy, but maybe even just, you know, helping other female founders, like things on, you know, a smaller scale. I don't know, but just, yeah, like the public speaking after I pitched on stage, you know, I was shaking and sweating and everything, but I felt really in flow. And I, by the end of it, I felt comfortable up there and I felt alive. And so that's something to me that I just have a little bit of foreshadowing. I love to share what I'm going through and I love to share what I've learned that it can help other people. So something in that realm, I don't really know exactly what it is, but that's been speaking to me. And then also, I'm really excited, you know, with the wedding stuff, just stepping into that. So I'm going to be, you know, going to Mallorca hopefully next month and just like looking at venues and really, you know, being able to kind of step into that creative process a little bit more and really take that on with, you know, some lightness and some levity and some fun. So yeah, those are kind of what I'm, I don't know, working on right now.
It's so exciting. And, you know, this podcast was a great example of all of the different chapters and lessons wrapped up into this conversation. I'm so excited to, I like see like the bulleted list of everything that we went through. And I'm like, we went through so much.
I know.
Oh, thank you so, so much. I'm so excited for your wedding. I know that it's going to be a beautiful celebration and milestone professionally and personally. So important. Allie, thank you for taking the time. Is there anything you want to leave people with today?
I mean, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This has been, I can't believe it's been like an hour and a half. It's flown by. Also, I just miss our sessions. So this has been so nice to see you. And yeah, everyone who's been listening, thank you so much for your time. I think the one thing that, yeah, I would leave you with is just, I love what we talked about with just showing up exactly who you are. I think that's so important. And that is really my favorite, yeah, piece of what we talked about, because at the end of the day, you know, if you show up exactly who you are, even if people don't like you, like I used to think, you know, everyone had to like me. And then I realized like, I don't really like most people. So that was a really unfair thing. And it was just so refreshing to be like, it's okay if people don't like me. So like, yeah, even if people listen to this and they're like, I don't really like her, like, that's fine. Cause like I showed up exactly how I am. And so I, yeah, just encourage you to think inward of like, okay, if no one was watching, you know, how would I dress? How would I act? How would I, you know, what would I do for work? Like, that's a really cool way to live, because you're never going to regret that, but you will regret living in a way that, you know, is just what you think people want you to do. So yeah, thank you so much. This was so fun. And just, it was great to see you.
Yes. Allie, thank you. The like, go off and be exactly who you're supposed to be feels like a really empowering note to end on. So thank you. Thank you so much.